Welcome to NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with your host, Dee Klein.
On today's episode of NFP, the Pixa co-founder, known as MetaMunch on Twitter, joins me to catch up on the variety of collections under the Pixa umbrella. He then explains the basics of Bitcoin ordinal NFTs, as well as the challenges and possibilities for the future of genuine NFT immutability. The discussion then switches to the latest zero royalty controversy brewing due to the fierce competition between the Blur and OpenSea marketplaces.
Hey, this is NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with me, Dee Klein. Today's episode is brought to you by the Koi Network. Koi makes minting NFTs super easy and inexpensive. Just drag and drop your file using their NFT wallet, Finny, and Koi takes care of the rest. Minting costs as little as 1 cent, so you can create as many NFTs as you want. And when they're viewed by other people, you even earn Koi tokens that you can use to fund your next series. Check it out at koii.network.
Nice. Right on. Here today, I have MetaMunch. He's the founder, co-founder of Pixa, which we talked to each other, I feel like it was more than a year ago even, with Pixa, and you've built out quite a nice little whole little ecosystem of NFTs with Pixa. Maybe you can talk a little bit about, first of all, about who you are and what Pixa is, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me on NFP Podcast. I think this is the third time, but yeah, I haven't talked to you in
is it the third time? Okay.
I think we came on a couple times early on, and then we haven't been on since. So I've been in me and my girlfriend, we co-founded Pixa, which is this project of pixelated, like it's mostly focused around these wizards and witches. The style of the artwork's kind of like arcade type of, it kind of inspired even by the like Roblox, that type of like very simple, very pixelated. And obviously back like when we started, which was in January 2021, the big thing back then was CryptoPunks. So, and that was the only major project really, other than a couple other ones. But that's kind of where the artwork inspiration came from, and we created these as kind of the test into NFTs, because I'd never done anything in NFTs before. We created this project called the Pixa Brews, which are just these pixelated beers, and kind of sold them for the amount of gas money we needed to mint them, and just tried to learn more about what this all was, and started to meet people, and that's where this kind of like Pixa idea came from, was just finding our niche of, oh well, there's kind of this missing area of kind of like the fantasy world or like even arcade type game stuff. So that's kind of what we ended up focusing on, and yeah, we've been working on it ever since. So
I mean, with that, you had kind of developed this distinctive style over a number of different collections. Like you mentioned the beers, but you also did it with like the witches and et cetera, et cetera. And so who's the creator of the art for that again? Is that you or?
It's my girlfriend. She's right? Kryptonica on Twitter. So we kind of iterated on a little bit. And yeah, like I was saying, like used, like there was kind of this niche we felt like that wasn't being filled at that point, where there was a lot of stuff like punks where it was very the theme was kind of being rebellious, that type of thing, right?
And maybe, but highly derivative, right? Like a lot of it was just like slight variations on punks, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so we kind of thought, well, what if we did a little bit more of a fun-loving approach, less of this kind of, because we aren't, like, I've gotten in crypto, and I love crypto now, but I was dabbling in it a little bit since 2017-ish, but I wasn't really in the hardcore group of, you know, crypto native type people, which I feel like some of these like original NFT projects had themes like that, right? That were very crypto native. So kind of wanted to take a little fun, more fun loving approach to it. So
No, it's changed a lot, of course. It's interesting when you talk about them being highly derivative, because with this new phenomenon, and I wanted to get you to educate the listeners on this, this new phenomenon of Bitcoin ordinals, my impression, and I mean, I'll admit, I'm very naive to it. I don't know a lot about it. Because it just came out of nowhere. It was like instant hit. It feels like there's a lot of derivative materials there too. Like a lot of people are just kind of pumping out stuff as fast as they can to be, you know, one of the first to have an inscription, you know, in the first 100,000 or whatever it is now. I think it's 120,000 or something. And it's not about what you're making on there. It's a matter of just making a mark and having something on there that hopefully someone will buy for a stupid amount of money, you know. So a lot of it is just, let's take this thing that was a hit on Ethereum and just redo it on Bitcoin and, you know, make a shitload of money from it. And, you know, not a lot of authenticity to it. There was the one with, I think it was Jason Williams, who he burned his Bored Ape on Ethereum, and then he minted it on Bitcoin. And it's an interesting topic because it's like, yeah, but see, this wasn't minted by the creators. This was minted by the owner. So is there any validity to that? I mean, if I buy, you know, Beeple's, I don't know, NFT, burn it, and then mint the JPEG on another protocol, does that hold the same value? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think some of this stuff is done, you know, mostly for shock value.
And, yeah, totally.
You know, you gain, you know, there's this monetization of followers on Twitter, right? So if you can, if you're able to if you're doing the value assessment in your head of if I burn this and I lose this money, or if I can resell it for something similar on Bitcoin, but I gain, you know, 50, well, that's a worthwhile.
Yeah, you're gaining notoriety, right? You're gaining impressions.
But the fundamental, I would say ordinals is the first thing in a long time I've got that really got me excited about like this kind of space again, like NFTs, because if you kind of dig past all of this stuff that's layered on top, like, you know, the derivative collections they're just being copy pasted and all the scams that are going on, like there's no marketplaces yet. You have to do OTC deals over Discord.
So you're basically trading with someone hoping they're going to pay you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so and these are major issues that people point out but in my mind, they're fixable, right? So if you can, if you can view ordinals as, you know, okay, there's this list of problems. And if there's, what are the inherent problems with ordinals themselves that can't be fixed? And what are things that, okay, these problems will be fixed over time as people have time to develop the tools. And I think most of the problems with ordinals are fixable. And once you actually get down to, well, what value add is ordinals, is that it's actually a lot cheaper to store on-chain data, which is like the main value add, in my opinion. And when you transfer an ordinal, it's incredibly cheap. So once it's inscribed, it's incredibly cheap to transfer. So we don't have this issue with Ethereum NFTs, where it's even like if you want to do a giveaway or if you want to, you know, give your friend an NFT and it's an ERC-721, you're kind of taking on a bit of a cost if gas fees are high.
Sure.
Or at least it was, right? Like nowadays, it's not that bad, but
it's come up again.
Yeah. And like when the network's busy, you're paying a lot to do those types of things. So
yeah, when that blur drop happened the other day, it was like $50 to mint something again. It was like, what is this? Yeah. We'll get to blur later.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, interesting. So when you're initially minting a Bitcoin ordinal, you're inscribing it, I guess is the word for it now. I mean, it's minting, whatever. What's the initial cost running around average right now? Obviously that varies with network activity, but like $20, something like that.
Yeah. It depends on the size of your file, the image file. So you're, so you're limited to, I believe, I forget the exact limit, but it's, you know, you want to keep it in like the kilobytes.
Yeah, it's going to be less than a megabyte for sure, because an entire block in Bitcoin, I think the record block is like 3 megabytes, maybe.
Yeah.
2.5, something.
Yeah, and I've never tested the limits of this because we were kind of doing our little project on Ordinals, which has just been this giveaway kind of fun thing for our Discord. Is Bit Brews, so they're just like they're we've made 50 new pixelated beers and put them on Ordinals. We've been giving them away, which has been fun.
Yeah, I see you're
But
fully into the ordinals, man. Like looking at your Twitter feed, you are
yeah.
going hardcore with the
Yeah. Well,
ordinals.
it's
But it's
been
well suited to Pixa because they are, relatively low data type image files.
Like it was cheap. So like each one of those is like maybe 7 or 8 kilobytes. So we
Right.
were paying, if there's the equivalent gas fees too on Bitcoin where you can adjust that. So that's really where it gets
Right.
how fast you want this created. But overall, I think it cost me maybe 10 or $15 for each one, which
Okay.
when you compare that to an ERC, when we were minting the wizards, which we pre-minted and then sold, it cost us on average like $150. And then we sold them for like 180, $190 to try
Right.
and make sure we made
Wow.
some sort of profit for the project to be able to like keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And so when you compare those two different things, it's kind of like an order of magnitude difference in fees. But I think even the bigger value add for Ordinals is the fact that when you transfer them, and people will start to understand this as they use them more and marketplaces come out, is that there's almost no fees for transferring. Like
It's practically like Lightning Network type experience.
you're paying like 50 cents maybe
Oh, okay, even
to
okay.
transfer them. So
Yeah, it's
it's
not
very
quite Lightning
cheap,
Network, but
not quite, but
because it's all on chain, right?
yeah,
So
but
it's not going to be like Lightning. You
it's
think they
less.
get to a point where we're going to have NFTs on Lightning, though?
Yeah, and there's a few different projects that are being worked on for Lightning. Like I think Stacks isn't that built on.
I
I'm
don't
not
know.
100%. Stacks is pretty new, as well, and I'm pretty sure they're built on. They might be their own chain. I'm not 100% sure,
Okay.
but yeah, I'm still kind of learning about all this stuff too. But it's been pretty interesting, little
One of the big
event.
selling points I was kind of reading a little bit about, maybe you can talk about it more than what I know, is the fact that these are legitimately on-chain inscriptions. This is not like, say, Ethereum, where it's saying, okay, here's the token data, but the image file is stored on IPFS. This is the image file is stored on Bitcoin, which is why it has to be small, of course. But can you talk about like why is that an important distinction?
So like on Ethereum, if you're minting, so for example, like Bored Apes, so this very, the premier collection on Ethereum. If you look at where they're on mint day or close to when that project came out, if you were to go on Etherscan and check where that image data is being stored, it was being stored on IPFS, which is
Right.
this interplanetary file system, is what it's kind of called short for. And you aren't incent basically people are able to pin data, therefore store data on this file network. Other people can access it, but it has to be pinned. So somebody has to voluntarily say, okay, I'm going to store this data for the
It's
network.
kind of like the old days of like seeding on Napster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good analogy. And so you're kind of relying on somebody caring about this for a very long time and pinning it to their IPFS node. And so that's kind of a problem because one day someone might not care and that link goes dark, and well, where does that image data go? And so there's been various solutions that have come out, like Arweave, which tries to
Right.
incentivize. They run their own chain and they try to incentivize people to store image data. So that's better than IPFS because there's at least an incentive to store data, but you're still
Yeah.
assuming that Arweave has value, like the blockchain and the token that they're being
Right. Like
incentivized with has
if it's
value.
not successful as a network, that's going to disappear too.
Exactly, yeah. So then the final thing is on-chain image data, which is the best. On Ethereum, you have to get very creative with how you do it because it's very, very expensive. And so there's like a really good project to refer to is Cyber Brokers. I don't know if you know them. They're by I forget the founder is traces back to kind of Avastar's days, which are also on-chain. But they
Okay.
created like really detailed artwork in SVG format, and they're able to layer all these SVGs together. And SVG can be, all these layers can be expressed as just like a kind of a string of all these characters. So that can be stored on chain and then
very small data.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, if you, it's still frustrating though, right? Like you have to, your that SVG string is going to be longer if it's more complex image, and also if it doesn't lend itself to vectorization, is kind of like a SVG is a vector format.
Yeah, so, I've had trouble with that in the past, converting stuff to SVG and it not turning out the way I wanted it to.
Exactly. So it's not this like simple thing to do. So then you go to Bitcoin, you say, well, how am I storing stuff on chain? And it just has a, instead of this, you're really trying to crunch down how much storage that you need on Bitcoin, you can literally just store the image data itself on chain, and you are paying fees, but from what I've seen so far, it's a lot less. So you don't have this, it's like kind of a limitation that you have on Ethereum where only really, really technical people can figure out how to mint an on-chain collection, because otherwise it doesn't make sense financially. So it's allowed people to go on Bitcoin and say, oh, well, now all of my stuff's on chain. And there's no distinction between off-chain and on-chain stuff because all of it is actually on chain. And that the founder of Ordinals, Casey Rodhammer, talks a lot about this on, he has the Hell Money podcast, and that's a really he has this like therapy session. I don't know if you've watched that podcast, but it's a really good introduction to Ordinals, and his co-host is kind of leading him through therapy after his like crazy week of no sleep and stuff, and he talks about how all these pros and cons, and especially that on-chain aspect is huge.
Well, and the immutability of it, right? Like it is actually permanent, right? So, you know, whereas with Ethereum, you can change that data, you know, they're actually permanent. And I mean, including if you make a mistake, it's there forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But now there is one interesting thing about Ordinals, which I found kind of digging through their documentation and digging through their GitHub repos and stuff, is that, so you can, Ordinals is a way of, they've created this system of keeping track of sat, like Satoshi. So individual, like this fractional, the smallest fraction that you can break up a Bitcoin into. And so each Satoshi is what you inscribe on. And and if you really look into how they've set up the system, like it's kind of arbitrary. They found a way to do this, but there's multiple other ways you could organize these Satoshis. And so people have argued in the Bitcoin community to say that are anti-ordinals, because there's a whole push that, you know, this is slowing down the Bitcoin network. It's making it more expensive, harder to use.
Which it clearly is doing.
For sure.
Yeah.
And so there's this push of someone to create a different system and point out that this ordinal system is kind of arbitrary, and that another person could organize the Satoshis in some different way. And so that's kind of an interesting kind of drawback of Ordinals, is that there's not this inherent, you don't have your own smart contract like you do on Ethereum. You don't have this like hard limit, and it's kind of a set of rules on Ethereum with these smart contracts as the way that you interpret who owns what, right? And the ERC 721 standard, although arbitrary, everyone has adopted it. But we're in the early days of Ordinals. You know, you were saying there's only 100K, a little over 100K Ordinals. Is there going to be a different standard that comes out that says, oh, there's a better way to track these, or there's a different way to track these? And it all depends on what people agree is the right way.
So would that potentially change the ownership of those tokens then, of those Satoshis?
Exactly.
Then?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, ordinal theory is what it's all this stuff is based on. And so if you look through it, it's fairly simple. And it's they try to keep track of who owns which individual Satoshi through the history of certain transfers.
Okay.
And so because it's a fungible token, right? Like this is a big question that everyone has, is how do you introduce this non-fungibility to a fungible token?
Right.
And it's all about tracking when were certain blocks of Satoshis created during this whole, you know, rewards process. When miners mine a block, they get issued all this, you know, they get minted Bitcoin. and therefore a bunch of these Satoshis. And so they're able to kind of organize these Satoshis in blocks of like, okay, well, we know in this, when these were minted, you know, Satoshi number this to this was created. So we know they're in there. And then there's a process as they get transferred to be able to track which one is which. But it's really just a system that the creator, Casey Rodarmer, has determined. And I'm still kind of trying to figure out exactly how it works. But from what I understand is that this is just one of many different ways you could possibly organize these things. So it'll be interesting to see as we go forward, does everyone agree that this is the right way? Or maybe there's a more more technical team.
More objective way to track it or whatever. Yeah.
More objective way to track it. Or even like somebody, if there was a group that came out and said, hey, we have a marketplace, we have a wallet, and we have a new way to organize these things. Like the frictionlessness of that whole system might push people to say, oh, well, maybe I'll not treat things as ordinals. I'll treat them as this other way of organizing. Uh-huh. So that's what's been popping into my head lately is that it's not, there is a lot of pros to ordinals, but there's also these things that haven't been completely been figured out yet because it's so early.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to watch for sure.
Well, I'm talking about the inscription process. You know, mm-hmm. I was looking into it a little bit. You had talked about using, I forget what it was, but it was on GitHub and, you know, having your own node and so forth. And then I was kind of digging around and I found, like, for example, and I have no, I'm not, you know, promoting this. I have no idea of the quality of the app. I just was looking and I found one called Xverse. And it's basically a Bitcoin wallet that they're kind of wanting it to be like the MetaMask of Bitcoin. Mm. It looks pretty slick, but I can't speak to the quality of it or the reliability of it. But basically, they're showing how you're able to mint with their app in like a minute. Like, it's just very simple. You're using a Chrome extension and looks pretty slick. Now, again, I have no idea how good it is, how reliable it is. But I think it's just a matter of time before there's a bunch of these tools that just make it very easy to mint on Bitcoin.
100%. Yeah. And that Xverse thing was huge because they, I think that thing you're talking about where they demonstrated minting in less than a minute, it was tied in with ordinalsbot.com, which is I've watched a few different things around these things, but Xverse, that was a sort of the Bitcoin wallet. And then you can connect it to, I'm pretty sure, ordinalsbot.com, and you can mint now multiple ordinals in one kind of transaction type of a thing.
Like a batch mint.
Yeah. And so one of the things I saw was somebody using Xverse to mint like 30 of these ordinals. And they paid, you know, $70 or something like that. $100 on some low gas transactions, and then it was the network was low. They waited overnight and they got them all minted, and it was like within 30 seconds their transaction been sent, and then you just have to wait for, you know, Bitcoin, it's like every 10 minutes if you're at the front of the line, get your transaction approved. But it's definitely come a long ways from even just a when did I get into this?
This is like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, like 2 weeks
it's
ago.
It's not been long.
I got my node downloading and trying to like get all this stuff organized the day before OrdinalsBot came out. And then that came out and made it a lot easier. And
right.
I was like, oh man, like I'm just going to start minting off this thing. Because even though they were charging a lot of fees, but I thought, you know what, why not? I'll just use this new a lot easier to use technology. So yeah, it's been a crazy couple of weeks.
Yeah, it has been like this. This change, along with the whole OpenSea Blur thing, which I do want to talk about. But is interesting with this, you know, is I feel that it's changing so fast. I wouldn't be surprised if in like say a month we've got a marketplace where you're trading these safely. Where you're able to just mint and sell them via, you know, someone's going to like on OpenSea, you don't really go to a separate place to mint. It's all built into their website for you. And that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a website where you go to mint on Bitcoin, right? I do wonder about, you mentioned the network impact on Bitcoin. And I mean, it's great for the miners on Bitcoin. They've had a tough year, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is a great way for them to, again, be, you know, gaining some income as well. And to incentivize security. It you know, the Bitcoin hash rate, I think it's the highest it's ever been because of this stuff. And that makes it more secure. It's the most secure network, undebatable, you know, it's not debatable. I just wonder, like, where does that go when you look at, and again, it comes, you know, this environmental impact, that's a big one, you know, you're going to be looking at a lot more energy consumption again. You're going to be looking at higher fees. You're going to be looking at, you know, if you're somebody in El Salvador, that's, you know, now, or, you know, places like, say, Argentina or whatever, that's going, okay, Bitcoin is the way I'm going to escape this problem of my money being worthless, right? And you might be someone who has maybe $100 in there, and that's a lot of money for you in a place like that. And you need to send some Bitcoin to somebody, say $2, $5, and it's a $10 fee. Like, that's not going to work.
Absolutely. And
of course, there is a Lightning network for that problem.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, they have had, like, so for example, with, like, the Lightning network, it seems like in the last even just few years, even just like the last, I've just noticed a lot more discussion and development around Bitcoin, even in this last year, even before Ordinals. Like, people seem to be starting to realize that there's ways that you can change the protocol on Bitcoin a little bit using these like kind of ideas of a soft fork, like they did with SegWit, and and introducing things like Ordinals, which just and like all these things that you can adjust things to try and make it better if we if you don't, you know, attack the core structure of Bitcoin. And so I think it's attracting a lot of developers to Bitcoin, and that's what Ordinals is going to do, I think, too, is that they've shown, well, look at, like, it's pretty ingenious that this guy did this and found a way to introduce this non-fungibility into Bitcoin. And now I think developers will say, okay, cool, like, we can have this funny JPEG on chain, but, like, what else could I do?
Right.
You know, what are all these other things that I could do to make, to improve Bitcoin? And I think it's going to attract a lot of attention, is probably the end result of Ordinals. And yeah, there's going to be all these, like, negatives, like the increase in fees and stuff. But overall, I think any interest that drives, like they got me, I always kind of wrote off Bitcoin in terms of my ability to contribute to it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Like, in order to be able to, like, because I like the technical side, that's why I got drawn into Ethereum, was because I really like smart contracts. But now this has kind of changed my perspective a little bit, being like, well, what else could I do on Bitcoin that might be kind of an interesting way that I could contribute to that community? Because before, I kind of thought, well, it's mostly them, you know, acquire more Bitcoin is the kind of view I kind of thought.
Buy and hodl. Yeah.
So
let me ask you then, is Bitcoin the ETH killer?
I think I tweeted that last week. I was like, what, like, we're worried about all these other ETH killers like Solana.
Right.
I don't know. I honestly, I'm very bullish on this Ordinals thing. I think it's going to make a lot of people question what's the purpose for each method of storing data. I think Bitcoin will be, like, this, there's the drawbacks too, that are that it's not as programmable. You can't have cool tokenomics. You can't have, you know, all these like airdrops.
No royalties.
Yeah, exactly. So all these things
are going by anyway, it seems like, but sorry.
I think the way that the founders describes it is that they're digital artifacts. Like, this will be really these kind of, what's stored on Bitcoin. It's these, what do you want preserved forever? And on Ethereum, I think it's going to shift to, well, what can be programmable? What projects can take advantage of that programmability? Or it's the cultural thing. So I think a lot of people that already have minted stuff on Ethereum. So, for example, that guy that burnt his Bored Ape, I kind of think the whole When you're buying a, if you're going to buy a Bored Ape, you're buying it for the cultural value. You're not really buying it for the token itself, you know, the image artwork being immutable.
Right.
Everyone, you know, this is not the core thing I think you're buying when you buy a Bored Ape. It's the ticket to the club. And
Yep, totally.
I think as burning that and you've been minting on ordinals, you kind of miss the point of Bored Apes in some way. Like that's not, I think. So I think people will start to evaluate, okay, well, where does my project make the most sense based on what each network offers? So, but you're right. I don't know what this is going to do to Bitcoin fees. You know, it might not be that's what might end up happening is it might not be cheaper to create an ordinal because the network fees have gotten so high once this
What's
gets
to
easier.
stop somebody from, now I don't know the technicalities of it. Obviously, there was a very technical innovation to come up with this solution for inscribing to a Satoshi. What's to stop a developer from finding a way to inscribe on the smallest unit on Ethereum? I think it's called a Wei, if I'm right. I don't remember. What's to stop that from happening? Wouldn't that be immutable as well?
Yeah, so that's another I'm pretty sure you can apply the same. Yeah, that's a good point. I never even thought about this on Ethereum. That's a really
And
good
that
point
would
because
be
I
because then you'd have all the token advantage, you'd have all the contract advantages.
Well, you might. Yeah, that's true, actually. That's a good point. I haven't thought about that. All I've read about was people saying, oh, I can't wait for, you know, the Litecoin ordinals to start coming out because that's very easy. It's just a
Okay.
fork of Bitcoin, right? So you could just
Yes.
apply the exact same thing and Litecoin network fees are like nothing. So,
The only thing holding it back that I imagine is that Ethereum does burn tokens to keep it deflationary. And so is it possible that you would have inscribed on one of these, I forget the smallest increment in Ethereum. Again, I think it is a Wei,
I
Wei.
think so too. Yeah.
And then that one gets burned arbitrarily. It'd be like, wait a minute. Like there'd have to be a way to protect it or something. But I don't know. I feel like that's, well, obviously, if you're holding it, it doesn't get burned. So I think you'd be safe. But to me, it seems like, you know, here's the beauty of this whole space is it's all about free market competition, unfettered competition. When it comes to that, I mean, sure, you can build marketplaces on it that are more centralized, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the innovation. I'm talking about the fact that you can have all these people innovating and coming up with stuff so rapidly because of that free market competitive environment that you could have someone going, yeah, you know what? I'm going to do this on Ethereum and it's going to be better than the Bitcoin solution. And then someone on Bitcoin working there is going to go, hey, actually, I found a way to make it, you know, interact with blah, blah, blah. And that's what's so fantastic about it to me.
I agree for sure, and it's gonna be fun to watch. Like I kind of find it funny watching, you know, some people on Bitcoin that have been so you know, hammering the drum of you know, this is censored, this is uncensorable money, right? And then we get to ordinals and it starts, it's
Censor
like we should
it.
censor these, yeah. And so it's
No,
crazy like
no.
how
Well,
quickly
it's the
people
same thing
can
when you look at
change
like
their
Elon Musk, you know, and it's like free speech, except if you're criticizing me, right?
Yeah,
What?
exactly. Yeah. So I don't know what's gonna happen, but all I think is that you can't waste time thinking like trying to fight some of this stuff. Like if it's possible, somebody's gonna do it. And that's like what you're saying with this free market. Like if somebody is, you know, finds a way to make ordinals on Ethereum, they should. And they should see if it
Totally.
gets
I
traction,
get into
right?
that for sure.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
And let the market decide what is the most valuable. And I think it's awesome. And I think, you know, I've been kind of as Ethereum and NFTs have progressed, like people have found ways to, you know, there's kind of a recipe book now for launching a project on Ethereum and being an influencer and you know, being able to be successful on Ethereum. And I think Ordinals has kind of thrown this huge wrench into a lot of those processes and has kind of exposed, you know, okay, well, who actually knows what they're talking about in this space and who doesn't? And I hope people are kind of paying attention to Twitter a little bit because the people that are, I don't know, I find it very interesting, the people that have fought this so much, where it's like, well, from your perspective, your market share is going to decrease drastically because you're, you know, people are going to leave to Ordinals and they're not going to be looking to you on Ethereum as a kind of thought leader or something like that for NFTs in particular. So it's going to be, I think it's super healthy to kind of go yep. through this and hopefully people will be able to understand the pros and cons of each. Cause I love ordinals. I think it's going to be great, but there's also cons that you have to weigh back against Ethereum based NFTs, and it'll be interesting to watch for sure.
Definitely. You spoke of free market, and it draws me back to this topic of Blur and OpenSea. And I wanted to talk about that with you mm-hmm. and how it was just recently announced by OpenSea that they were changing their fee structure. And when you boil it down, the impression I get from it is they're no longer going to be enforcing royalties the way they were. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's my impression, because they have to compete with this 0% Blur market that mm-hmm. so now they're doing 0% fees, promotional, they say, and changing the whole royalty structure.
Yeah, so the post I saw was that, so for a limited time, they're removing the OpenSea fee, right, which is huge. That's obviously directed at this whole Blur thing, mm-hmm. because of how much market share they've taken, even over the last, like leading up to this airdrop, and how much trading, real or not, was being done on Blur. They lost a lot of market share and probably a lot of fees.
Do you have any idea what kind of numbers they were? I don't know.
I know that Blur is official. I'm pretty sure they're officially the bigger marketplace now in terms of volume.
No way. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, having said that, I think their top three traders were fully, obviously, clearly just wash trading between each other, like millions of dollars worth of wash trading, you know? Yeah. So I don't know how valid that is.
I don't know either. And, you know, there was a lot of controversy around the Blur airdrop too, right? With, I don't know if you know that when it came down to the airdrop day, they geolocked US IP addresses. So they couldn't, people in the US couldn't claim their airdrop unless they had a VPN. And and they didn't announce this. This wasn't anywhere in any official documentation or on their Twitter or anything.
To avoid some kind of SEC thing or something?
Yeah. And so the problem was is that even, you know, when that airdrop got announced, it's kind of, you know, it's a race to the Uniswap, you know, to the swap pool to try and get out either really early, or you wait for a bit of a bump.
Sell them while
out.
It's really high. Yep.
Yeah, and so some less tech savvy American based Blur farmers, or you know, Blur people that have been trading on Blur, were at this disadvantage where they didn't get access to their airdrop until they could figure out a VPN. Which, by the way, is not, you know, I don't really understand the legality aspect to all that, or like whether or not that, you know, you could be tracked down afterwards for claiming that airdrop via VPN. Yeah. But there was a lot of people that complained afterwards saying, well, by the time I actually, you know, figured this all out and got it, you know, Blur had dropped by, you know, dropped in half. Yeah,
like
exactly. Yeah. And everyone else had this opportunity to kind of, you know, dump the market.
But honestly, I feel like in that case, you had the lion's share of the tokens going to a few very top farmers that were just wash trading the shit out of the whole market. And it's very typical of the scene right now. And you can say whether or not that's ethically good or bad. I don't, you know, point being, it's not real. Yeah. It's not real.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's where it comes down to, is like maybe OpenSea feels like, well, if we can, and I think, you know, when we were talking about earlier, like, are they going to do a token drop? It's probably these changes and kind of implying possibly that, you know, we may do a token airdrop at some point.
It's Have they suggested that? I've never seen them actually say anything about a token.
No, but I've read some Twitter threads on how, you know, some of these changes they've made, and some of the talk around people that work with OpenSea, how they might be moving in that direction.
It points toward a token airdrop. I see
exactly
what you're saying.
And if
I want
if
my MetaMask initial token airdrop, MetaMask, if you're listening, the real MetaMask, not MetaMask support, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't put that in a tweet. You'll get the most engagement from bots ever. Oh man. But
anyway,
yeah,
I mean, a part of me as a creator, I look at Blur and I, you know, I can't help but feel negative about it. But at the same time, I've always been kind of a one-of-one creator, so the royalties don't really affect me too much. I've had a few resales here and there of a few pieces, which was great. But because it's not a collection like what you're doing with Pixa, royalties don't affect me in the same way. Now, surely for you, this whole formula changing, that's got to affect Pixa negatively.
Yeah, absolutely. Like royalties is kind of that thing that, you know, we don't do a ton of volume anymore. You know, from we kind of get these periods of time where we'll get this influx of new people where they'll find our project and it'll spread like wildfire for like a week. And then things, you know, like everything in crypto, there's a bit of a pump and then, you know, kind of comes back to equilibrium and we just keep doing what we're doing. But we get that little, you know, influx of funds through the royalties to be able to kind of keep going. But yeah, the fact that the royalties are going down to essentially zero, I'm not sure like how like some of these big projects where they're so reliant, you know, at least with Pixa, it's me and my girlfriend, and like I'm always gonna work on this. This is this, even if we make no money, I've been fortunate enough to like you know, make some money off of it when we first launched, and you know, I just find it fun. We don't have a big apparatus that requires.
You're not
you know,
huge corporation that's put millions of dollars into this. Yeah,
exactly. So like, if you're a project that requires that income to keep up your company, I could see a lot of people creating their own marketplaces and possibly contracts that for new projects that come out that only isolate their NFTs to marketplace contracts that are approved by them.
Right.
So you could see, for example, whoever is the next Bored Apes, they could say, well, we've blacklisted, you know, OpenSea, Blur, like all these smart contracts, and there's ways to also reserve the right for future contracts. You can leave space in a contract to be able to update that stuff. And you could blacklist all these marketplaces fairly easily. I'm pretty sure. I haven't done it myself, but I'm sure this is a thing that you could do. And then just say, well, we only have this one marketplace that we support, either it's in-house or it's some other one, and we're going to charge you royalties. Yeah. That might be the way of the future, but that kind of
severe fragmentation. It's you know, it's like I have my Netflix and I have my Prime Video and I have this Disney Plus whatever, and it's like eventually it's like, this is ridiculous, you know, like I was trying to save on my cable bill and now I spend twice as much on all these streaming services, right?
Yeah, and it's like you're moving back in, like it's making things, you're creating more friction for the whole you know, NFT creator especially. And I think, you know, all these things that have come out, you know, where you're expected to have on-chain data, you're expected to have, you know, some sort of utility with your, in terms of NFT creators that are creating large projects, already the bar is so high to even crack into that higher echelon of, okay, you've checked all these boxes, and that requires a lot of investment, a lot of money to even get to that point. And now you're adding on top, okay, well, in order to even make money long-term, we might have to have our own marketplace. We might have to figure out some way to enforce royalties to be able to continue to make money. I don't know. Or the opposite side is, maybe this just encourages more projects to say, well, every 6 months we're going to have to do, you know, the third Mutant Ape sale or something like that, right?
Another collection or whatever. Well, you know what? Honestly, realistically, we talked about free market dynamics before. It is, you know, another example of free market. You're gonna trend toward lower cost. It's gonna trend toward consumers wanting to spend less to get more value. And that's just a natural trend. I mean, the one way you could counter it is you go, hey, we've got this elite, you know, marketplace over here that's really, you know, shiny and fancy, and then so part of the appeal is having it kind of sequestered and having those royalties in place and having that kind of status. I guess, you know, to me, that's the only way to really fight it, is to go, no, if you want something special, you know, where you are paying royalties because the work here is special, you know, mm-hmm. then maybe there, that's where you get those fees. But yeah, it's only natural. I mean, the whole mm-hmm. Walmart phenomenon was based on, you know, selling stuff as cheap as possible in the largest quantities possible. And that's basically, you know, taken over the way that, you know, you shop for anything. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, it's all online too. And again, the same thing, massive volume, low cost. Feels mm-hmm. like that's just the way things trend.
Yeah. And maybe to make up for it, you know, people will just charge more, right? Maybe this, you know, this meta right now of having super cheap or free mints, that kind of goes, at least with big projects, might go the way, you know, you might see less and less of that as people start to realize, well, I have to make money on my mint to be able to mm-hmm. to keep going, because I can't count on royalties. So it'll be interesting for sure. And I agree.
You'll have fewer of these collections that just drop their whole thing for nothing, right? Because that's not even feasible anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't charge 5-10% royalties. And but yeah, I agree with you though. Like all this stuff that's free, the good thing about Ethereum and crypto and the fact that it's such a free market is that some of this stuff gets figured out pretty fast by the market. You know, like it's these bombs get dropped and people have to adjust. They have to like adjust their strategy. The number of times I've had to adjust my strategy with Pixa to try and, you know, find my way back into the spotlight. It's a lot, but there is a way to win sometimes, right? And it's fun in that way because everyone's affected by these things as well, right? Mm-hmm. Equally. So you can try and hold on to, well, I'm, you know, hold on to the past, or you can just go with the roll with the punches and try and make the best of it. So
yeah. So maybe we can just wrap up with, you know, obviously you're excited about Bitcoin Ordinals. Maybe you can talk about anything you're looking forward to here in the next little bit.
Yeah. Well, in regards to Pixa, we're still, you know, our project has been chugging along. We've been, we kind of have all our collections built out to the point where we're mostly just working on utility. So one of the big uh-huh. things that we have coming up is we're getting all of these, we've kind of had to adjust the artwork to put it into this metaverse, but we're getting into Web3. It's called Web3, that metaverse, WEBB3. Okay. And it's like this pixelated metaverse where you can import your collections. And so we're working hard to try and get that in there so you can log in with your NFT and play as a wizard or a witch or whatever and kind of exist in that metaverse. So that's going to be fun. It's kind of very similar style to what we're doing. So that's what's to look forward for Pixa right now. And then just in general in the NFT space, I'm mostly looking forward to seeing the first marketplace for ordinals. I think that is going to be a huge question mark if they can actually do it. There's still questions of, can you run a decentralized marketplace on ordinals because there's no smart contracts? How do you do this?
Well, it is a tricky problem.
I think that'll be the next big thing to come out, is if there is a truly decentralized marketplace, what does that look like? How do they do it? And does it take a lot of people from Ethereum onto Bitcoin? So,
and there's bound to be a number of messy things that happen with, you know, early innovations on trying to make, like if you look at early smart contracts and how they were so flawed and they could be exploited, and who knows, there could be some crazy marketplace story in a, you know, month where 50,000 mm-hmm. Bitcoin ordinal NFTs somehow got drained or whatever, you know. So yeah, exactly. it could be interesting times for the next month or two, I think, here.
Yeah, it's going to be messy, that's for sure.
Well, hey, thanks again for spending this time talking with me. It was really good to catch up with you and also to learn a lot about all what's going on with these Bitcoin ordinals and with Pixa and Blur, OpenSea. Appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. That was a lot of fun.
For sure. Take care.
Thank you.
Hey, if you enjoyed this episode of NFP with D. Klein, please like and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks again for listening to the Non-Fungible Podcast. See you again soon.